a number of aspects are totally timeless here at the resort. We don't have televisions in our accommodations. We haven't had great cell service for years. So even as things have changed and evolved electronically in terms of what you might think of for your vacationing stay somewhere, we haven't necessarily seen a wave of change here at the resort. What's probably changed the most is how people are finding us.
Welcome to Learning Life.
And the thing that I've realized, from the CEO to the NFL football player to the janitor, we're our toughest critics and we're hardest on ourselves.
But you have to be willing to say and point out the things that need to be said.
The only way to grab somebody's attention is with a story.
Welcome to Learning Life with John Toda and another Vermont Local episode. My guest today is Sarah Morris. Sarah is a fifth-generation host at Basin Harbor in Vergennes, Vermont, and serves as the resort's concierge. She's part of the Beach family that's been running Basin Harbor since 1886 and works closely with her mother, Penny Beach, and Uncle Bob Beach Jr., both fourth-generation hosts. As many of our listeners already know, Basin Harbor is one of the oldest resorts in Vermont with an amazing history behind it. In the 1920s and 30s, Sarah's great-grandfather started building cottages on the property along with the golf course, most of which still stands in the same place today. It's a great Vermont entrepreneur story and one of our state's best multi-generational businesses still operating successfully today. There's a lot we can learn from Sarah about the hospitality industry in Vermont and about being part of a long-running family business. So let's get into it. Sarah Morris, welcome to Learning Life.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So it's really great to have you on the show. We're all huge fans of Basin Harbor here. So to kick us off, tell us what it was like growing up at Basin Harbor.
Yeah, so I really grew up at the resort and am a child that is a product of Basin Harbor, almost the way the children of our guests are. I grew up going in the kids programming, dining in our restaurants. And I grew up with a mother who was a career hotelier. So I learned not only how to act around guests and how to present myself that was polite and not so much seen but not be heard, but certainly able to engage in a conversation with my grandparent while I was having dinner with them, to greet guests that were joining us from all over, and just be cordial and polite to new people that I was meeting in my life. And I would say the hostess blood has been in me from the beginning.
Yeah, I think it's just such an interesting place because of how old it is and how much effort has gone into just evolving it over the years. You've seen it for your entire life living there and now working there. How has it changed in your years being involved with Basin Harbor? What have you seen from the early days of you growing up there and getting involved with the resort to where it is today?
You know, it's interesting. A number of aspects are totally timeless here at the resort. We don't have televisions in our accommodations. We haven't had great cell service for years. So even as things have changed and evolved electronically in terms of what you might think of for your vacationing stay somewhere, we haven't necessarily seen a wave of change here at the resort. What's probably changed the most is how people are finding us. It was very much a word of mouth, or way, way back, it was one of two stops, or however many there were on Lake Champlain if you were taking a ferry boat. So you just didn't have many options, or you relied on your uncle or neighbor, or whoever it might have been, that came to us to say, hey, I vacation here, it's enjoyable, you should come too. And that's how people found us. We have over the years had ads and articles written about us in print media, but increasingly we're able to reach a much broader audience electronically. And so that for me is a bit of the paramount change, not so much our programming, but more how we're able to reach people.
Yeah. And I think the history behind the resort is so intriguing to me. And so tell our audience a little bit about it. Obviously, I know from our conversations, it was originally a working farm back in the 1800s. And then your great-grandfather really started to evolve it a little bit into the early stages of what it is today. Tell us, if you could, kind of what it was like back then and what drove your great-grandfather to start making that change at Basin Harbor.
Yeah. So it all started with my great-great-aunt Ardelia, who was my great-grandfather's aunt. His name was A.P. Beach, Allen Penfield Beach. And Ardelia bought what was a working farm in the late 1800s. And she started taking on summer boarders in 1886. And at that time, there weren't commercial roadways to get places. So people primarily took the trains up out of the New York, New Jersey, Connecticut area and up into the Adirondacks or Vermont, and then got on steam ferry ships and were driven to a certain port and then spent a good amount of time there. I think our summer seasons were shorter then, as much seasonally, but people came to take the fresh air and be outdoors. And so when the resort first opened, accommodations were very different. It was very small rooms with a common bath at the end of a hall in an old farmhouse. We actually raised the main lodge building, had two stories, and we raised the roof and added a third to have more accommodations there initially. And guests actually participated in the farm life. And we joke that they would go out and work in the morning, but didn't seem as motivated to come back after lunch. So, you know, vacation was alive and well, and the leisure traveler blossomed into the environment that was here. My great-grandfather really was influenced by a friend of his who was down in South Florida in the Miami area in the early 1920s and saw the boom of hospitality and tourism that was taking place there, came back. I feel like there's a lot of joking in our family history, but we joked that he enjoyed taking care of the guests more than the farm animals. So with this inspiration of the Miami area and coming back here, he said, we can put in a golf course instead of having these farmlands. And so our golf course remains relatively flat. We call it a very walkable resort course because whereas some of the more mountainous ski resorts that are in the area and are open in the summer have very hilly courses that you have to take a cart out on, ours is very approachable. You can literally walk onto it and you're not going to be penalized too badly if you haven't played golf in 6 months. So farmland turned into golf course. Accommodations literally started popping up in various locations along the lake as we needed more space. And my great-grandfather was really intrepid in his construction of accommodations. He would get a request from a guest that said, my brother would love to come. He has two kids. They'd love a fireplace. And in 6 weeks, he would construct a two-bedroom cottage for them so that it was ready for their arrival for the summer season. So very quick construction style. It's actually called studless construction, where all of the boards are tongue and groove, so they hang together and the studs are only in the doorways and windows on a number of our cottages. So quick construction, but really designed for the summer season where we're not remotely insulated to be open in the winter, let alone the variety of weather that we can get and coverage for cross-country skiing and things like that. But so we have evolved from people spending the full summer with us to folks primarily coming more of a full week, Saturday to Saturday during the summer months. But we also have a strong shoulder business in May, June, September, and October that allows us to provide seasonal employment to a number of staff that need that full 6 months or 5.5 months of coverage to complete a full calendar year of employment.
Yeah. And I know we talked a little bit about kind of understanding what visitors want out of their Vermont vacation, that quintessential Vermont experience. And I think you mentioned before, back in the early days, they were helping out on the farm and that was kind of what they expected out of a Vermont vacation. And then it gradually evolved over the years. What have you seen today as that perspective of what people want to get out of a Vermont vacation or what they're expecting? Have you seen that even change in your time with the resort?
I have. And we have played around with a variety of ways of bringing the Vermont experience to guests here on campus without them having to leave the resort. I would say historically, it remains true that when guests come here, they park their vehicle at their accommodation and ideally don't drive it for the rest of the time that they're here. They can easily walk throughout the campus. They can bicycle to and from. We have bell staff with golf carts that can give them rides. And unless it's a mobility issue or potentially if it's 95 degrees hot and humid, a temperature issue, there's really no need for them to get back in their vehicle and travel elsewhere. So we've had buffet dinners where we brought local farmers and producers down to have a bread display station or a produce display station to show what the product looks like that's then going into their soup that they're having or their salad, and potentially to have guests purchase those items to take home with them, and sort of just a little more storytelling along the way. It's interesting what guests want to hear about and think about of what contributes to their stay, but maybe they just want to kick back and not know where their beef comes from, or maybe they want grass-fed beef, but they like a good fatty piece of meat also, and leaner meat that's grass-fed doesn't always have the same flavor to it. So we've done a lot of testing of the waters to see what the right mix is to be able to offer both programming, education for our customers, and sharing additional elements of the Vermont experience that aren't right here on campus.
Yeah. And I do think one of the great aspects of it is that the cottages are known to be not very tech friendly. So I think you've really stayed true to that, where Basin Harbor represents an escape from all of the technology and services that we get so much of in everything else. Is that still part of the vision? Is that the way you're going to move that forward? Or is that something really special about the resort?
It certainly is. And I would say, in the same way that you can program yourself from sunup until sundown and be doing something for every minute, you can also just sit back and literally watch the lake go by or read a book or take a nap every day. And I think that is mirrored in the ability for guests to connect. We have meetings that take place here. We have board meetings, corporate retreats, things where people get into a think tank environment mentally and in person, but also increasingly the American vacation is sort of at risk from our work life, right? And so the ability to connect and maybe have that 2-hour phone call in the middle of your family vacation, while not optimal, allows you to spend that time there instead of mom commuting back to the city or dad commuting in to work in order to accomplish that. So we do actually have really good Wi-Fi on campus. That's as important for us, for our guests to be able to stay connected, as for our staff. We've historically had a very international staff here. And in many cases, they have very close family members that are back home. They have friends. Seasonal work is not for the faint of heart, in the sense that you're uprooting yourself every 6 months. So having that connectivity there is really important for our staff too. And so there is the ability to connect if people want to, but we also offer the great excuse of not great cell service in every location. And if you want to turn your phone off and blame it on us, we're happy to be here for that too.
Yeah, I know. From too many of my family vacations have been spoiled by having too much connectivity. So I think just having that excuse is nice, and it's a nice change of pace. And so when you talk about your guests, where do you see most of your visitors coming from? Is there certain parts of the area? Is it primarily Northeast? And are there certain states that are more common to Basin Harbor than others?
Dating back to our history, it was largely the New York, New Jersey, Connecticut region, based on where trains were traveling and where ferries could take them. Similarly, the greater Boston area, the trains went up into New Hampshire and Maine. And so I think a lot of us, while we might not go to the same place to vacation that our grandparents went to, the regions that appeal to us are ones that we have potentially for generations gone in our families. So we do still see a great number of people coming up from that sort of New York City area, greater New York area. And what's really interesting is the tolerance for travel. So we've done trade shows in Boston, and we'll say, oh, we're a 4-hour drive from here. It's super easy. You just jump over this mountain and drive up here. And they say, that's crazy. In an hour and a half, I could be on the Atlantic coast. Why would I drive 4 hours to go to a lake in Vermont? Whereas the New York, New Jersey, Connecticut area, they're driving 6+ hours, in some cases 8 or 9 hours to get to us. So there's a different tolerance there in terms of travel. But generally speaking, we say we're an 8 to 9 hour drive radius. A lot of our guests do drive to get to us. There's a different packing technique when you're doing that, where you can stuff things in nooks and crannies around the car. You can strap your bicycles on the back, maybe a kayak on top or a stand-up paddleboard, and bring your dog with you too. So that really allows people a lot more flexibility. But as families grow and people marry other, you know, folks that live from other areas, we've got increasingly an audience that's coming from the West Coast or from out of the country and comes here for family reunions and to be with the people that they grew up with and love.
That's very cool. And I know long before I lived in Vermont, I knew of Basin Harbor. You always remember seeing the little red Adirondack chairs, I think, in the ads and things like that. And so from a marketing perspective, so much has changed, and you can reach such a wider audience now more easily. So obviously getting to the West Coast, getting to international visitors. How much has that changed? How much are you doing on the marketing side to expand the boundaries of even getting people beyond that 9-hour drive radius?
Mm-hmm. I would say that we're fortunate to get folks outside of that drive radius, because increasingly air travel has become a little less reliable, just with the current state of events. But we're not trying to poach on the Raleigh, North Carolina market or other to get people to travel drastically outside of where they want to go. In some cases, people find us by happenstance, and then we start a new tradition of family reunions coming from a region. We had a family from Texas that was here this year. I think increasingly that's as much a competition for us against a cruise in Alaska or a trip to Morocco. You know, the international travel having decreased recently, I think really affords us more of that domestic audience, but it's word of mouth. And we, to this day, don't try to be anything that we aren't in the sense of luring people here for anything outside of what they might expect. So if you don't know what life on Lake Champlain could be like, we'll certainly try and show you, but we'd like people to be initially inclined to come here anyway.
Yeah, no, and I totally get that. And for any of our listeners who might be in the hospitality business trying to get a bed and breakfast or a hotel, something that may not be as well known as Basin Harbor, but they're trying to get that up and running and find an audience and a guest base for themselves, what's some lessons learned, recommendations that you could offer to them?
Yeah, a great question. My uncle's wife is actually involved in smaller inn and bed and breakfast sales. And so it's really, we often talk about the scale and the size of an operation relative to supporting all of the amenities or services that you want to be offering. At a certain point, if you're on the smaller end as a property, you're going to be working the front desk. You're going to be stripping sheets off of beds. You're going to be cooking eggs for breakfast in the morning. And so as the owner and operator and not able to afford to have a staff to help you do that. Equally, if you can't maintain a certain level of occupancy, you know, we even here at Basin Harbor saw a dip in occupancy last year, and it was challenging for us to mentally not be able and physically not be able to offer the full level of services that we can when we're at 70 or higher percent occupancy. Just the volume of money coming through literally didn't afford us the ability to be able to offer our full suite of services to a fraction of the guests being in house with us. So I think it's important to be, in my mind, conservative on what your occupancy might be, look at the revenues that are coming through, and make sure that you can truly afford the full offering of what you're considering. A lot of properties are closer to other resources. Basin Harbor is 7 miles from the city of Bridgend's, which has shopping, other restaurants, elements that could support our operation if guests wanted to head that way for dining. And certainly many of them do venture off campus in that way. But being more of a downtown property or something that had walkability to other resources might allow you to say, we're not offering dining. I have a lot of colleagues that are thankful they don't have dining as part of their operation because it's just a whole other animal and it runs from first thing breakfast to last thing dinner service and 7 days a week.
And I know your role as concierge, we talked about this a little bit, and you love that aspect because you're so dialed into what your customers and the guests are really feeling and the things they're asking for, the things that they're frustrated with at different times. How does that role kind of inform the way you move forward and the things that you offer or don't offer to your future guests?
We have always loved feedback from our guests here at the resort. Even a complaint is a lens that we don't have. It's showing us the perspective of what our guests are experiencing at the resort. And so in my role, being able to talk to guests before they arrive, I talk to a lot of our first-time customers and we'll spend 25, 45 minutes on the phone with them, which is a big commitment. And, you know, we get to people as quickly as we can in the queue of people looking for information, but to just talk through what they can experience while they're here. And in a lot of ways, it's let's make that reservation. Let's book that activity. We can always cancel it once you get your feet on the ground, but at least then we know we have a game plan and you're not going to feel like all the activities or the best dining times were booked up while you're here. And if you're asking a question as a customer, it's likely that someone else is asking that same question. So it certainly informs what information we put on our website and social media, what photos we're using. We love our staff guest relationship here. So we've started highlighting our staff that are working here. Guests that come back year after year love seeing those returning faces and almost develop as much of a relationship with the bartender down at the waterfront as they do with their housekeeper or the receptionist at the front desk. And so the ability to know those familiar faces and really develop a relationship and a rapport with our guests is what we're here for. We don't want a transactional relationship with our customers. And so it not only allows me to start developing those relationships, but steer people in the right direction and make sure that we're giving them all the information we can pre, during, and post-stay.
Yeah. And I think every time we go to Basin Harbor, I think what pops into my head is it reminds you of that resort in New Hampshire or New England, Maine, somewhere that you went to as a kid. And it kind of has that aspect that it feels like it was a little bit frozen in time. And it offers some things that you just don't see in a lot of resorts today. So I think it's so great that it stayed true to its roots and yet obviously offering more and more over the years and evolving with the customer base. And the other side of the story is this is one of the longer running family business stories in Vermont and this multi-generational approach to running the resort today. What is that like really growing up into a family business like this, working with your mom and your uncle so closely? How's that experience been for you? Because I know we talk to a lot of early stage family businesses, and I think they'd love to hear what that experience is like from one that's been doing it for so long.
Yeah, we have been blessed that those of us that are here really enjoy working with each other, and we have a good, honest working relationship together. The other side of that coin is that there are family members who are not here because they do not want to be a part of the business. And I think the first thing is really making sure that your heart is in the right place and that if you're involved in it, it's for the right reasons and that you're in a role that is sustainable for you as a family member within that business. It doesn't do any good to sort of put on the hero cape and carry more than is comfortable or is sustainable only to have it go down in flames and have you burn out and say, that's it. I'm not involved at all. And so, you know, we have never had succession planning at Basin Harbor. We're probably a small enough business that is both okay and terrifying every generation. and we figure out what works based on the resources and ideas that are available at the time. And that has ranged from more family members being involved to really long tenured managers who have been here that are basically an extension of our family and whose help we would not be in operation today. And just, you know, seeing what feels right at the time. And one family member's commitment 30 years ago is not necessarily representative of where they want to be now. And you could multiply that forward. So I'm childless by choice. And that poses a lot of questions with a multi-generational family business of who's next, what's next. And my standard answer to that is typically that's a terrible reason to have a child, but also, I have family members that are proof that just because you're born into it does not mean that you want to go running into the sunset with the operation. So it really has to be a good fit for the family members. And I think that the family needs to be okay, and ours certainly is, with the idea that if there aren't family members there, it's what's the next option. You know, don't force it if it isn't going to work best and healthily for everyone.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, right? Like you're the fifth generation host. If there's not a sixth generation host, you've got long-standing employees that have been with Basin Harbor for so long that, like you said, they're an extension of the family and it can evolve and change over time. So for you, what is it like working, and for the family members who are there, what is it like working together? How do you interact with each other, overcome the challenges, the disagreements? We just had a mother-daughter team on recently, and it was great hearing about how they communicate together and where they draw the lines between personal life and work. What are some of the things, some of the best practices that you have in place with the family members that you work with every day?
I think some things that immediately come to mind are clear role and responsibility. My mom and uncle worked well together for decades because my mother took sort of the front of house guest services, lodging, general operations of the resort side and was that voice of the resort. And my uncle took the back of house facilities, maintenance, engineering side. And so if a guest had a complaint about their room, my mother was handling that. She would talk to my uncle about physical attributes of the room that might not have been up to what the guest was expecting. But, you know, it was clear who that went to. And a family motto of sorts has always been whatever it takes, you know, where if there are cigarette butts in the parking lot, we're picking those up. Or if it's a heavy turn day in housekeeping, we're working the laundromat or picking up linens and trash. Or a guest wants a bucket of ice and you happen to be there, I know how to get that. And so there's the knowledge and how you can apply it. And then making sure that it's not being, you know, it's not a mom and dad scenario where I didn't like mom's answer, so I went to dad. It's very clear, like this is their decision and I understand how they're going to think through the question and the answer and I trust their decision. If you want a second opinion, you're going to come to me, but there's no closed doors in the sense that if someone came to me and said, Penny said this, what do you think about it? I'm going to go to Penny and say, I heard you said this, you know, like let's you and I talk about it. And then together we'll reach a decision that we can both stand behind and support, as opposed to going behind each other or creating more work out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it sounds like you have a great working relationship and you figured out over the years and where those lines are. And from your personal perspective, how do you kind of separate your personal life from running the concierge side and being a host? It would seem like there's times of the year, particularly through the summer, where it would be so overwhelming taking care of all the guests and everything that's going on that you don't have enough, very much time for a personal life. How are you kind of protecting those boundaries?
Yeah, it's everything from setting your team and your coworkers' expectations of how to reach you, when you're available, what resources you can provide at any point during the day if they need something, as setting guest expectations. I will put an out-of-office message on the concierge email, for example, to say, I'm not monitoring this between 5 p.m. and 9 a.m. and our front desk team is available at this email or this phone number, and they would love to help you during that window or whatever it might be. Invariably, I'm here earlier or later than that and can still be checking messages, but just to set an expectation of, just because one person isn't here doesn't mean that there aren't 10 other people on campus right now who can help you with that. And, you know, certainly people will get dialed in on, like, I need to talk to Sarah. She's the only one that can book a dinner reservation for me. And that's certainly not the case. So just being clear across the board with how accessible you are or not. And if you aren't, saying that and offering other resources, because invariably we all need someone to reach out to say, am I doing this the right way? Or is there a history with this customer or something about that? So just setting expectations internally and externally.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's so important in the hospitality industry because it's so driven by customer service and you want to be there all the time, but you also have to protect some of their own personal space. And so when you flip gears into the off season, what does it look like at Basin Harbor? I think a lot of people know Basin Harbor in the summertime, in the fall. When you get into winter months, are you still open for guests? Do you have a certain type of guests who prefer to come in those months? What's it look like in the off season?
Yes, I liken it to when a hurricane is coming, which it's, you know, not the right region for that necessarily, but we drain the pipes, we take toilets apart, we turn off heat. So the property really goes to sleep in the winter months. And we are largely getting our water source out of Lake Champlain. We clean and treat it here on campus and actually have our own wastewater facility also. So the capacity that we have here at the resort is greatly reduced in the winter months because we turn that whole system off because it's above ground and would freeze and isn't insulated appropriately. So we reduce to a team from north of 200 staff in a good season. We'll go down to about 20 employees in the winter. And that's primarily our maintenance crew that are doing repair and maintenance and project maintenance work throughout the winter months. It's our sales team that are actively planning events. It's our reservations team that are plugging in family reunions and individual stays. And then it's our, you know, executive team that's managing financials, culinary, guest services to really put elements in place. We plan out all of our recreation programming. It's really a planning time for us to be able to say, this is what the picture looks like. Let's put it up on a board, in some cases, literally with post-it notes on a wall, see what it all looks like. And then when our guests get here, all that programming and planning is done and we're able to execute on that and deliver it for the summer season. So,
yeah, that's great. It's great to hear that because I think there's so much effort, planning and work that goes in preparation in the off season so that you can have a great on season when all the guests show up. And I guess it's also kind of nice too, because you all must be running like full gear all the time through the prime season. So it's nice when you get that chance to step back and plan. And so along those lines, obviously Basin Harbor occupies one of the most beautiful spots on Lake Champlain. It's known now through this area so well, and you've got such a loyal guest following. And a lot of what they expect from it is this charm of the resort that kind of has stood the test of time and hasn't changed so much over the years. But when you look at the future, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, how do you see Basin Harbor evolving? Do you see things changing in any ways to change with the times, or is the vision to keep it as much as you can the way it's always been as really a tribute to the past?
Yeah, we very much consider ourselves stewards of the land here. You know, we are looking after what you would be crazy to build today again. and it's our job to hang on to it. And it not only increases in value as land and as real estate, but also as an amenity and an entity for our guests that are coming here. We relaxed our dress code in our dining room, but guests still wear a jacket and tie to our more formal dining room and love that tradition and will uphold that themselves. We this year had to reduce our programming offerings just due to staff available and bandwidth, and guests materialized their own old school bingo night. And they're like, we'll run it. Give us the cards, give us the balls and the wheel. And they put it together. So it's a combination of continuing to listen to our guests and what they're interested in. And that has, over the past 20 years, included an evolution of our dining program and flavors and recipes that are available here to compete with a more metropolitan offering where a lot of our guests are coming from, but also staying true to those traditions and allowing the 35-year-old parent who was here as a child to now offer that same experience to their child who's coming up through and to recreate those memories and see that same experience through their children's eyes. So I think it's going to be a combination of what our customers truly vote for with their dollar, be that signing up for a meal plan, wanting all those meals included in their room rate, or asking for more of an a la carte basis where they can go into Virgin's for dinner one night or go over to Westport and have dinner one night during their stay with us, or frequenting the golf course. You know, all of those are voting with their dollar in terms of telling us what they want to be able to do and participate in. So we'll keep listening to them and hopefully be able to offer it all for decades to come.
Yeah. I think it's so refreshing to hear too, just that you don't have to change something just for the sake of changing it, that people really do appreciate something that is kind of nostalgic to the things that we had when we were kids. And like you just said, bingo night. And I could think of being at some family resorts when I was a kid, sitting on lakeside and doing bingo in the dining room. And you love that. And you want your kids to be able to experience it too. So I love what you're doing and the way you're offering that to everyone. And I know that as we speak right now, I'm getting you during the end of summer rush. So I want to thank you for taking time during the peak season to be with us.
You're so welcome. Happy to be here. And it truly, there's so much to learn from each other in business. And one thing we didn't just touch on is the mentoring relationship and the hospitality and lodging colleagues that I have both here in Vermont and nationally that I could pick up the phone at an instant and call and reach out to. So to be able to offer that kind of a resource to your audience is what it's all about. And so I'm thrilled to be a part of it. Thank you.
Yeah. And on that point, if anybody is listening and they're trying to get into the hospitality business, they're trying to get their business started off the ground, what's the best way that they can learn more from people like you who are doing it so well? Is there some place that you go to meet other people, to network with them? Or is it through VT Tourism? What would you recommend?
Yeah, there's a number of outlets that range from small business conferences that are put on through the Vermont Chamber. There is an annual Vermont Tourism Summit that takes place. That's happening this November at Killington. There's a Vermont Lodging Association, which is a network of everything from B&Bs to large resorts in the state of Vermont. And, you know, one of the silver linings of COVID is the connectivity that electronic meetings have allowed us. And I think our peer group is stronger now than it has been in a long time, just because you're not driving to Chittenden County to have that meeting, and you can bring more people around the table without that commute time and time commitment.
Yeah, that's awesome. And those are all great resources for our listeners. And for listeners who are interested in visiting Basin Harbor, where's the best place for them to go to learn more? What's the website for them?
Definitely check out www.basinharbor.com. But we're always here for a phone call as well. And you can email us at stay@basinharbor.com.
Awesome. Well, Sarah, thank you so much for sharing your story and being with us today.
You're so welcome, John. Thank you.
And to all of our listeners, thank you for being here each week. As you know, we have a new episode that comes out every week. So wherever you're listening, be sure to subscribe, leave us comments. We love to hear from all of you. And until our next episode, happy learning. Hey everyone, John Toda here. I want to thank you for tuning into the show each week. We love our Learning Life community and are so grateful for your support. We'd appreciate it if you would take a minute to rate us and write a review for Learning Life wherever you're listening right now. Your ratings and comments help new people find the show so we can keep growing our community and bringing great interviews on the topics you care most about.